My Family Thinks I'm Crazy, a podcast where I, your host, try to give you some tips on how you can explain all this weird, wild, crazy conspiracy stuff to the people you love most. Because that's what I've been trying to do for the past 10 years with no success. I've been telling everybody that our government is shady, but every time I do, my family thinks I'm crazy. The hollow earth, UFOs, aliens invading, fluoride in the water, they spray our skies daily. When I talk about these things, they think I'm crazy. There's no escaping anymore the evil that we're facing. Illuminati mind control, they're sacrificing babies. The end of days, but anyways, my family thinks I'm crazy.
What, they don't want to listen to you?
No, they don't want to listen. They don't want to hear it. They're just like, oh, here we go, Mark. Off again with your
Mark being Mark again.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, that's the thing about podcasts is when you're on the air, and it's like therapy, you know. If I can't talk to my family about this stuff, I'll talk to you, Matt, and all our listeners.
You know, just tell your whole podcast.
Yeah. So who are we talking about today, Matt?
Pieces of furniture. It just blew my mind. I'd never seen anything quite like it in this area in particular, kind of starting at the end of May. And, you know, we'd see people pick things over, but a lot of things never really found their next home. And that led us down the path of thinking, like, gosh, there has to be a different way for pieces to find their next home and not just get picked up by the waste management system. We didn't realize quite how immense this problem was until we just started to try to tackle it in Cambridge. But it's something like 24 billion pounds of furniture waste in the US alone. And then something like 34 billion pounds of textiles are thrown away every year. So we, you know, it's a huge problem.
You just heard today's guest who joins me, Mystic Mark, here on the My Family Thinks I'm Crazy podcast. Thank you for tuning in and enjoy this conversation with the Beeble. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the My Family Thinks I'm Crazy podcast. And joining me today are two folks who I met at the Brimfield Antique Flea Market in May. They have a really inspiring business that they're going to be talking about today, but it's so much more than that. It's a lifestyle. It's a way to give back not only to the planet, but to the community. So I'm so excited to welcome Ryan and Calla from Da Beetle, which is so much more than just an Instagram page. You guys have a storefront. You guys go to markets. That's how we met at Brimfield. So let's get into this story and how it came to be. How did you both get into this and how did Da Beetle come to life?
Mark, thanks for having us. This is super cool. It was fun to meet at Brimfield and we're super excited. This is our first podcast ever as Da Beetle. So it's a super milestone.
Congrats.
Thanks. So yeah,
I'm here for it.
Right on. Da Beetle is a circular economy startup operating in Cambridge, Massachusetts. So we do estate cleanouts. We operate a brick and mortar store in Cambridge, and we have online store. We sell online, mostly sell furniture, home decor, but our main business is estate cleanouts. So our mission is to annihilate the landfill. We keep as much as possible diverted from going to the dump, and we do that through donations, but also through resale. We give our clients, our estate cleanout clients, resale credit against their service fee. We're cooking with gas, but we started, just reselling furniture. Calla, when we were both living in graduate housing in Cambridge, found a leather love seat in sort of on the side of the road. We picked it up and she sold it on Facebook Marketplace and we started the business with the $500 we got from that leather couch. Here we are today. Yeah.
I love that. Yeah. I have a similar story finding an item on the side of the road, and you get hooked, you know, when you score the big fish, so to speak. Right. And if you have a decent sized vehicle, there's not much you can't pick up off the side of the road or haul back if you are in a city and you can walk it back to your place. But yeah, I have a couple of Facebook Marketplace stories that, I'll try to remember. That's inspiration, but you know, there's so much stuff. It gets overwhelming. So let's get into the details, because you guys have a really informative section on your Instagram that I noticed, where it kind of spells out how much waste there really is, not only in this country, but around the world, and how our country is actually contributing to, you know, pollution and landfill waste across the world. Because, you know, I'm sure a lot of people know this, but when clothes end up at the last stop in the road, so to speak, here in the United States, they often end up getting shipped across the ocean. And, you know, a lot of times, who knows where it ends up, right? I don't know the logistics. So I'd love to hear what you guys have learned, because I'm sure you've looked into this.
Yeah, I mean, it's really great to be here, Mark. Start there. We were chatting before, and it was fun to kind of reconnect after months apart. We really started this business after I moved back from California to the East Coast. And I was really flabbergasted by, like, now Cambridge has changed quite a bit, but there wasn't any compost available as an option where we were living in graduate student housing. I was really shocked by that, because in California, you have to be very diligent about how you sort your waste. And then that spring, we saw so many pieces of furniture. It just blew my mind. I'd never seen anything quite like it in this area in particular, kind of starting at the end of May. And, you know, we'd see people pick things over. But a lot of things never really found their next home, whether that's just people pass it by, or it's on a kind of an inconspicuous street, or, you know, for whatever reason, someone hasn't put it on like a free page. And that led us down the path of thinking, like, gosh, there has to be a different way for pieces to find their next home and not just get picked up by the waste management system. We didn't realize quite how immense this problem was until we just started to try to tackle it in Cambridge. But it's something like 24 billion pounds of furniture waste in the U.S. alone. And then something like 34 billion pounds of textiles are thrown away every year. So we, you know, it's a huge problem. I think the secondhand and resale market is really a wonderful way to start to tackle it. Certainly purchasing used as much as possible. You know, we hope to have a much greater impact as we continue to scale. But I think we're keeping our expectations realistic as we just start our business.
Well, those numbers are astounding, and I'm so glad you were able to reference that just to illustrate to people why this is more than just a trend and something that I think fits really well into the sort of aesthetic and lifestyle of a lot of the people I've spoken to on this show. You know, philosophically, it's aligned with, you know, a lot of the ideals that many of the people living in this country have. They just may not be aware of this particular problem, but we have such a huge audience of people that want to make a difference. And this is such a simple way to do it. You know, I think for the sake of conspiracy and entertaining that crowd, there's a sort of conspiracy in this country about recycling and how, you know, I don't know the veracity of this, but you'll hear from time to time, people will make the comment, oh, well, you know, you're just wasting your time putting all those cans in the recycling bin. It's just all going to end up in a landfill anyways, because the waste management companies aren't recycling, at least the way we were taught in schools, right? There's a sort of glossy finish, or, you know, this is environmentalism, and it was very vague, but you know, hearing how much gets wasted, I feel like it's only a matter of time before this becomes a compounding issue. And what's replacing it? I think that's another big concern too. And it's expressed a lot on this show where people talk about how beautiful architecture used to look and how functional items that you bought at the store used to be and how durable and long lasting they were, right? So, you know, to go and find these items that haven't withered away and give them a second life, yeah, I think is vital, especially when you consider what's replacing it. I mean, not to harp on IKEA, but I think that's kind of the cliche, right? Is that a lot of people are buying furniture that comes out of a box, they put it together, and that's the convenience of the modern age. I mean, do you guys find yourself running up against this sort of modernist way of life that seems to be in clash with this mission, which is to not waste things?
Yeah, I mean, to go back to the stats, I mean, in Massachusetts, 50 to 60 baby boomers die each day, and they each leave 350 to 400 pounds of waste after they've passed. So when we come in, we're really, and our clients work with us because we're donation first and resale first. And, you know, we resell not because we're trying to make a profit necessarily on the things that we're reselling, because we make our money from the estate cleanouts, but we're reselling so that things stay in circulation. And it's been interesting in terms of the modernism question. You know, our store is right across the street from a vintage resell mid-century modern store, and their prices are very inaccessible, and we get a lot of business because we have similar products that span sort of the gambit of time periods, but are all very reasonably priced. So college students that are coming into this area can use us to buy furniture that's beautiful and can be used for another 50 to 60 years. And it might be a designer brand. So yeah. I think we sell the brown furniture just as much as we sell the Eames chair. So it's,
yeah. And I'd say one of the focal points when we started this business was to make secondhand furniture purchasing accessible. So that's why we intentionally price things to be at an accessible price point, but also offer delivery and just being centrally located so that folks, you know, it's hard to tell someone or to operate in a way that is judgmental towards the ease of, you know, or I should say the accessibility of something like IKEA. It comes to your door. You know, we all live busy lives. It's really challenging at times to, you know, when you're moving someplace new, you may not have a car, you might not have means to go and do these things. So we thought, well, if that's the impulse, is to find something that's convenient, it's easy, it's accessible, it comes to your home. What is the countermeasure to that to encourage people to buy secondhand as much as possible? And we really founded this business on those points, you know, having accessible price points similar to Target and Wayfair and Amazon and IKEA helps to, you know, make it monetarily accessible, but also being centrally located and providing delivery so that people don't have to find a car. Maybe they don't have access to a vehicle, or maybe they are unable to operate a vehicle, or they might just not have the, you know, capability for whatever reason to move a large piece of furniture themselves.
Yeah. And you're highlighting something that, you know, at least from my limited experience dealing with antiques, a lot of the later generation antique dealers will, and I'm sure you've run into this, they express this contempt for younger people who have turned their markets into basically thrifting for clothes, right? In the heyday, they remember, you know, furniture as far as the eye can see, especially at a place like Brimfield, but now it's largely turned over to clothing. And, you know, aside from a very small percentage, I'd say a lot of young people aren't interested in buying furniture that lasts. And so, yeah, it's a problem that needs to be addressed. And I'm sure in a place like Cambridge with, you know, college is everywhere, right? New England has like such a high per capita of higher education. I remember the time I spent in New Haven, oftentimes in late spring and early fall, you'd see all along the campus just piles of, you know, old furniture. And some of it was really decent because you have people with money who are coming to spend time at Yale, and they're not going to live, you know, uncomfortably. You know, their standards are higher than your usual average person. So I imagine it's kind of like a treasure hunt sometimes, being around all those colleges. You know, you never know what you could find, you know, all these interesting minds walking around for the most part.
Definitely. Something like 12,000 people per year, like transition in and out of Cambridge specifically. Right. So there's so many.
One school, yeah. Or one town with how many schools in that town, right? So yeah, it's really incredible. But to go back to the point that you're making about how much is wasted, 60 baby boomers, she said, every day just in the state of Massachusetts pass away and leave that much behind, right? So you look at this across the United States, and this is starting to, yeah, I'm starting to realize why there's so many junk trucks and estate cleanout businesses that have been popping up. Because I don't remember seeing much of this 15 years ago. Maybe I just wasn't clued into it. But, you know, when I was, you know, just out of high school, I don't remember seeing much of this. I remember going to like Salvation Army and Savers. But yeah, it seems like it's become sort of on people's minds.
Certainly.
Yeah. And there's a bottleneck, you know. I think junk removal companies, a lot of them try to donate and recycle as much as they can. But places like Savers and Goodwill oftentimes won't take furniture because they're just so overwhelmed with it. And I think a lot of the market is for, like you're saying, clothing. And we think we've come up with a model that can solve that by being sort of a top tier estate cleanout company while having, like Calla said, prices that are competitive with the IKEA or the Target or the Wayfair, with much higher quality. And I think the generations coming through university now and generations that are moving from place to place are more interested in that than they are in going to IKEA and not having something that can move with them necessarily. So yeah, we love both our clients at the front end and our clients at the back end that buy our furniture. It's really amazing people, especially because most of them want to support our mission. So it's really fun.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's part of why I wanted to spell this out on the show and give the audience an idea of what's possible, because I mean, you guys can only cover so much ground with your business, right? I mean, there's so much opportunity for young people to get involved in something like this and make a real difference. So yeah. Now
we're hiring, Mark. So if there's anybody who comes through, that
listeners in New England, so put it out there. Your website, well, I'll definitely have it linked in the episode description. But if there's anybody in the Cambridge area, Massachusetts, yeah, get in touch.
And how did you start the podcast? Tell me a little bit about the inception here.
I'm glad you asked, because it's a good. It's a good opportunity for me to maybe connect the dots. And because, you know, my audience is like, why are we talking about antiques all the time, all of a sudden, you know? So, so yeah, in 2020, I was at the time a delivery driver for Amazon, and I had listened to podcasts for up to 6 or 7 years at that point in time, and had multiple different driving jobs before working at Amazon. But I got fed up and frustrated with the, you know, growing restrictions around the pandemic and what they were putting us under as far as, you know, working conditions at Amazon. And I just said, you know what, screw it. I'm out of here. I'm done with this kind of job. And I'm going to start a podcast because that's what I've been obsessed with for the past however long I was at the time. And it became a good vehicle for all the ideas that I've been interested in for a long time as an avid book reader my whole life. And then I got lucky and connected with two different comedians at different points that I still work with. And that kind of helped me get ingrained in an established podcast community. So it was Sam Tripoli and Tinfoil Hat Podcast. And I started working with him around 2020 as well. And the podcast, I mean, has grown and moved in all sorts of different directions, from conspiracy to the occult to history, spirituality. I mean, we really don't have many limitations as far as what topics we'll cover. I know what my audience is interested in, but a lot of times I like to indulge things that are more activist oriented, not necessarily political in a divisive way, but political in an inspirational way. And it's becoming harder and harder to do in the past couple of years, right? Especially in a way that feels universal, like everyone can get behind, let's save the environment, right? And I feel like this is something that I've always cared about. And now, you know, with the textile waste and the opportunity to go ahead and rescue a lot of that, you know, and the sewing machine behind me, like this has become another hobby of mine, thanks to the podcast and the people that I've met. I mean, 5-6 years, there's a lot of twists and turns, you know, there's a lot of elements that have grown out of the podcast or fallen away from my life because of the podcast. So yeah, it's a complicated story, but I think last year when my grandmother passed away, it was that same week I was invited to go to Brimfield for the first time. And it just was like a overwhelmingly positive experience in such a, you know, low or dark point in my life that I just felt like I needed to go back in July. And then in September, I met my girlfriend Taj, and she really encouraged me to get involved with this in a bigger way, because she had already been doing markets on her own. And thanks to the podcast, I was able to get a van. And that really, I mean, going from driving a beat up Honda Civic to a van really changes what you can get off the side of the road. So yeah, that really helped me level up. And now that I see the value in what I'm doing, I want to talk about it more on the podcast, you know, not necessarily make the podcast all about it, but find a way to inspire people and connect them to cool people like yourself, especially people in the Massachusetts area. But really, it doesn't necessarily have to be limited to that, because Brimfield is a global event. People come from all over the world to go to Brimfield. And New England specifically is a repository for these antiques. I mean, it's one of the oldest places in the country. But on top of that, you have a lot of established wealth and a lot of industry that went away but survived in this very curated and niche way. You know, some companies that were doing the, you know, creating what they're creating really well hung on longer than others. And you have a sort of, you know, off-putting of really high quality stuff in those places where those factories went out of business. You know, those towns lived around, like Thomaston is a great example. If you clean out a house in Thomaston, there's a good chance you're going to find one of the famous clocks made in their factories, because everybody in the town either worked for the factory or had some aspect of their life connected to it. So, you know, in that way, it's become a really interesting, maybe, opportunity for the podcast, because it gives me a chance to talk about history in a more tangible way, you know, items and objects that people can connect with. I mean, one example of a really compelling story that we learned about on the show before I ever was really involved in this was a couple years ago, has to do with the Kodak Film Company and how a large number of years into their history were, you know, there was this sort of obsession with spiritualism going on in the country at the same time. And Kodak was helping these people doing seances and, you know, providing them materials to take pictures of ghosts and things like that. So it's like, you know, to find an old antique ghost plate, you know, if it, whether it's a ghost or not, who knows? But to find that, I mean, that would be an antique that hits on a level that I think would be very valuable to somebody that, I don't know, listens to this podcast and collects stuff like that. But yeah, that's kind of, that occurred to me is like, oh, maybe that's what I'll do. I'll specialize in really weird stuff that my podcast listeners will buy from me online. So who knows? I haven't come across any haunted objects, but I will say one of the earliest episodes of this podcast, we talked about a haunted, it's called a Dybbuk box, which is another, I think it's like Hungarian for devil or some sort of ghoul. But this man pulled a Dybbuk box out of a house in Scotland, and he, I think, lost his home because this thing was haunted, and it just was like spontaneously combusting things around it. Multiple homes that this object was in caught fire. So at that point, you're like, there's something weird with this object. So on that note, with everything you guys have come across, have there been any items or objects that have just kind of perplexed you or struck you as strange, odd, a weird vibe even? Like, what comes to mind when I say that? And it could be nothing at all. If it is nothing at all, then you guys have good luck.
Well, I definitely like going up to Salem and seeing the House of the Seven Gables, and I'll look out for a daguerreotype next time I'm out there and yeah, see if I can spot the ephemeral ghost in the background. Oh,
and someone would buy that from DeBeetle, I'm sure.
They would. When we clear out the House of the Seven Gables, we'll have lots of
time. And on that note, I mean, maybe you felt that vibe in some of the houses you've cleared out. I mean, it's possible.
Nah, I haven't felt that yet. I don't know, Calla, have you?
Not yet. I think so far we've been really lucky, just the folks who resonate with the mission and the clients on that side of the business are just the kindest, warmest, most thoughtful and engaging people in general. And I think maybe because of that, they've had like, we did work on a house in Dorchester, which had been in their family for many, like several generations. And even that house had nothing but good vibes. I imagine that won't, you know, maybe that luck will run out. I hope not. we've certainly found interesting pieces. I don't know if we found haunted pieces quite yet, or maybe they are, but with like benevolent spirits.
Well, and that's something that, you know, again. All right, ladies and gentlemen, let's take a quick break to thank our sponsors. First and foremost, the number one supplier of She Legit. That's right, Too Legit to Quit. Vibe Med X is the number one supplier here in the USA of She Legit. Check it out today. Get yourself some She Legit now. Be too legit to quit yourself. Give your immune system that boost it needs with She Legit. Go to vibemedx.com and use the promo code CRAZY to save today. Now, let's get back to this episode. Remember, every episode of My Family Thinks I'm Crazy podcast is ad-free and interruption-free. When you sign up on Patreon, patreon.com/MFTIC, you get the video version of most episodes, including the one I just did coming out soon with Juan Ayala. Me and Juan back at it again. We're doing a lot of episodes together as I get back into the swing of things. That's right. We are going to kick ass and take names this August. So be prepared and stay locked in. Get there on the Patreon, patreon.com/MFTIC or myfamilythinksimcrazy.substack.com. Now let's get to this dynamic ad break, and then we'll be right back to the show. Hey, folks, it's me, the host of the My Family Thinks I'm Crazy podcast. That's right, Mystic Mark, telling you about meat brought to you by Omaha Steaks. You've heard of them before, Omaha Steaks. Well, listen up. Omaha Steaks is raising the stakes and upping the quality because not every steak is good enough to be an Omaha Steak. They're looking for consistency, hand-selected master butchers, okay? And they know what they're doing. They've been doing it for over 100 years. Their 110th anniversary is coming up next year. Yeah, that's right. Five generations of meat people. These people know meat. And they've got the grass-fed. They've got the triple trim. They've got the Wagyu, okay? Chateaubriand. Filet mignon. All right? Listen, if you're eating meat, they're cutting it and they're sending it to you straight to your door. And with the promo code BEEF, you're going to save now with Omaha Steaks. You've heard of them before. They've been around, folks. But little did you know that Omaha Steaks is raising the stakes right here with the My Family Thinks I'm Crazy podcast. Use the promo code BEEF right now and man up or lady up and get some beef or chicken, air chilled chicken, delivered straight to your door. Okay? No funny business, no nonsense. Don't ever buy meat off the back of a truck in a parking lot ever again. No, no, no. The real connoisseurs of meat go to Omaha Steak. Use the promo code BEEF at checkout. That's omahasteaks.com. Use the promo code BEEF at checkout. omahasteaks.com. Promo code BEEF. Welcome to the My Family Thinks I'm Crazy podcast. If your family doesn't think you're crazy, they might after talking to me because there's a concept you are now going to be familiar with called psychometry, which there are some people who claim to have this ability where they can hold an object and essentially use, you know, clairvoyantly see into this object's history. You know, there's different, I guess, varieties of how this psychic ability occurs in these people. It's not always a visual thing. Sometimes it's more of an energy, a feeling, you know, could be auditory. You hold an object and you hear a voice, you know, some like a personality that was somehow imbued in that object. So there is this concept. I don't know how common it is to come across something like that, but I imagine, you know, the right crystal, you know, might hold a resonance. If it's like some old China crystal vase, who knows? I don't know. You know, I'm just speculating here, but that's the kind of stuff that I'm crossing my fingers when I go and do a clean out, like, oh, what's what kind of strange thing is going to be in this house?
Yeah, I hope for that someday. I think it'd be cool to have that kind of, hopefully, spooky, but in a positive way. I think certainly have been to places that give you the heebie-jeebies. Just ironically, not with our line of work quite yet, but maybe that's just luck. What do you think, Ryan?
Not in a house, but I come from a family of folks that have done a lot of dowsing. You know, dowsing.
Yeah. We talked about it recently on the show, actually.
So that, you know, I'm familiar with that for sure. And I'm into aliens for sure.
Okay. we're loosening up here a little bit. So now, dowsing is up our alley here. I mean, if anybody wants to potentially find treasure, the word on the street is you could do that with dowsing.
Treasure probably, like, but it was in my family, at least, it was like a very practical, like finding where to build the well.
Right. Water. Yeah. Well, and it works in this uncanny way that, you know, you might be interested in listening to a recent interview I did with a woman whose father was a master dowser in England and taught others how to do it. But he claimed that he could douse for anything if he just sort of connected with the resonance of whatever they were looking for, water or what have you. I guess water is particularly easy for us because our bodies are made up of 75% of water, but there's some conscious element going on with dowsing. As practical as it may be, there's something intangible there that has to do with our consciousness. I mean, could be my opinion, but I would argue that science is not too far off from agreeing with that statement if they haven't already. But
that might just be another term for remote viewing.
Well, and that too, you know, I mean, this could just be, yeah, like a more defined or clearer way of doing the same thing, right? Remote viewing might take a lot more concentration and effort, but it's yeah, somewhere along the same spectrum of ability as dowsing, you know? And I don't know how familiar you guys are with like the Goodwill bins. Maybe you go there, maybe you don't. I'm sure you've heard of them. But I feel like if I am in a good mood and I have something on my mind, like, you know, today we're looking for this, oftentimes the bins will provide. And there's like this sort of spiritual thing about it because it's competitive. You know, there's a lot of other people there, and, you know, someone else could grab something that you saw, right? So it's not necessarily a guarantee, like walking into a store, that you're going to get some, you know, get what you're looking for. But I feel like, yeah, if you're doing it for the right reasons, which you two clearly are, there's like a little bit of like kismet and luck that comes with this kind of work and finding things. Because again, whether it's because the objects are conscious or not, you know, maybe they are, maybe they aren't, but these things want to continue living. It's almost like they know, you know, this person will save me from the dump, you know, and they kind of send out this like alarm that certain people are clever or, you know, tuned in enough to pick up on. But yeah, as far as like objects go, what particular objects really, like, you know, kicked it up a notch for you guys? Was there anything that you found that maybe taught you something you didn't know, or an object that you found that you're like, we cannot sell this. This is ours. We're keeping it. We love this. Like, what are some of your success stories so far doing this?
Yes. Good, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. We have a rule that if we're going to take something, we've got to also have something go out of the house. So that's from the beginning, was we had a lot of intention around that, I think. There are definitely things. I mean, I'm looking at six or seven things in the room right now that we've, you know, kept since we've started to do clean outs.
But it is a lot of like what you were saying earlier, although I'd say if for maybe it's just me, because I'm usually the person who's thinking, gosh, I wish that we had X, Y, and Z either in our collection or in our home, or there is, you know, kind of what Orion was saying, with something has to either be, you know, transitioned to a different role in our home or moved on to someone else's home. But, you know, I'll have something in my mind like, gosh, we need a new dining room table. We just need a new dining room table. Ryan and I are both quite tall human beings, and we were really lucky. You know, his family is so generous with us. They've shared so many of their belongings. They've rehomed to us, and then we've rehomed to other people. But there was, you know, we used to have this dining room table that I couldn't fit in. our knees may used to touch the bottom of the table, and it would be so frustrating. And Ryan's very, you know, considerate and calm. He's like, yeah, if you want to find another one, that's great. But this one's fine for now. And no, it's not fine. And we found like the perfect dining room table that like is excellent in our space. And it like satisfied these very specific requirements. It had to be circular and only have one leaf, and the chairs need to have a certain distance. And it was really funny to walk into this home and do a walkthrough and be like, that's the table I was looking for. I hope this client goes with us because that was what I was looking for this whole time. Or other things like that will happen that are really seemingly almost bizarre. Like I'll be thinking of this very specific thing and I'll be walking around for years being like, oh man, you know, I don't want to buy it new. I hope that I'll find it. Like this is a very niche thing, but there was like a specific foam roller I wanted that was very soft. I was like, I'm just not going to buy it. It seems a little silly to purchase another piece of plastic on this planet. If it comes to me, it'll come to me. I'm not worried about it. And one day I'm walking down the street, like really close to our apartment, and I look down and it's sitting there. It's the only thing on the side of the road, this very specific thing that I was looking for. And I was like, gosh, that's so, I wonder how it knew to, how of all the places to be walking in Cambridge at this specific time, it just seemed funny. But I think, yeah, it's just funny how some pieces kind of find you. And there's something to be said about openness and clarity. It might not be exactly what you're looking for in the way that you imagined it, but it's the right thing at the right time in the right place. Ryan is, I'd say, a little less focused on material objects for our purposes, and maybe more of like a look, always looking for something like interesting and new that we haven't found quite yet. But you can tell them about the chair we found in the basement the other day.
Yeah, I will say on sort of like this manifestation idea, when we first started and we were just taking furniture from the side of the road, I had just left a job and we were both sort of unemployed, which was fine for the moment. And it was pretty pivotal to find things that we could sell just driving around Cambridge in our Subaru Forester. And we'd go down a block and find nothing, and down another block and find nothing. And then, you know, an hour would go by, and then eventually we'd say, okay, we're going to stop unless the next block we find something that we can take and sell. And then we'd turn down the next block and there would be this beautiful piece of furniture that was just put outside of a mansion somewhere in Cambridge and fit perfectly in the Subaru. We could take it and we'd take it and sell it in a week. And I think, yeah, having a mantra, having, you know, belief is real. Belief makes things happen, whether it's just we see new things because we believe we're going to see them, and or there's a resonance that makes it happen. I think throughout this journey, at least the short 10 months we've been doing that, this, it's been sort of the story of how this has evolved. We've sort of spoken it into existence. So yeah, that stuff is real. I mean, it takes a lot of hard work, but a lot of luck and belief in what you're doing too.
Yeah. Right place, the right time, and a lot of preparation before you got there, you know. I think, yeah, there's something definitely resonant here. You certainly understand. Now, given what you're doing, how do you maintain this level of minimalism? Because it does sound like you're very strict about, you know, all right, well, we're going to have this many things, and if something's coming in, another thing's got to go. I could use some of that. I mean, you see how many books I have behind me. There's no more room for books in this apartment. It's sad. I love books. I want more.
Yeah. Books is not, I mean, I don't know if you can see back there. That whole room is, I mean, books, I don't know that. That's something I don't do. And I've gotten much better at it now, but I used to buy lots and lots of books. And that's not something I've downsized. I think for us, we're not taking objects to keep, right? Like the objects are to move on to their next home. home. And the things that we do bring into the house, like are that table Cal was mentioning, and sold our other table. Yeah, I think for me, it's, I go into a lot of these houses. I mean, some of the basements that we've been in are like, we did one basement that was a hoarder situation, and it had unopened tools and like helmets and electrical equipment that was 50 years old and still in the box and just stacked to my waist. And so that is a caution, I think, to me. I mean, there's all sorts of stuff that I would take and keep because it's cool, but
yeah.
Brian's being very humble and modest. I think when the very first day we committed to making this not just a side hustle, but a proper job for us, very specifically said, nothing can come in the house. It can't come to the house first. I think that's been really helpful because it creates a buffer between the excitement of finding something and then more of the practical reality of where does this add value in a way that something that you already own, you know, either a purpose it can't fulfill, or does it bring joy in a way that's different? And then having to make a plan for that, the piece you already own. And I think it's, you know, I kind of call it like possession stewardship, like being really mindful that you are responsible for your objects, for the duration of, you know, your time having them. So, you know, being able to like find someone, you know, our dining room table went to this really wonderful couple that was just moving back to Boston. I got to chat with him and his family member and his friend and, you know, talk about like the history of the table. And they, you know, they got to know, it was really lovely when they came to pick it up. But I think being very conscientious, you know, that the first R that we should be, you know, really adhering to is refusing new things. Sometimes folks will come into the store and they'll feel like very sheepish, like, oh, I love coming in here, but I never buy anything. And I feel really bad that I've come into your store and I didn't buy anything. But it's an opportunity to remind ourselves that, you know, it's to be a conscious consumer as much as possible. You know, it's great to buy something new if it's exciting or it fulfills a new purpose, or you just love it for whatever, you know, reason, and it brings you a lot of joy. But to be thoughtful about how you, you know, maintain it or hold it in its life and, you know, how it gets rehomed.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And like for in terms of like things into the house, everything goes to our storage units. We bring nothing to our house. So, and we have to pay for our storage units. So anything that's going in there needs to at least feasibly be something that can move.
Yeah.
And then to like an earlier question about what have we found that was really, I mean, I really like furniture and not necessarily just a single time period. Like I like Eastlake furniture, and I also like an Eames chair is cool to me too, a mid-century modern or, you know, 200-year-old furniture. But we found this at an estate sale, actually, these two very rare dressers, ammo decks. That was very cool. They're beautiful, and sold them to a restorer, and he was gonna. I mean, they were very rare, but anyway, I mean, like that sort of thing. We found a Rochebeau love seat in the garbage during Austin Christmas, maybe 8 months ago. We just found an Eames chair in a basement. Those are the things I like. Califine's other things.
Yeah.
I like the smaller pieces. I mean, I love the furniture too, but I think we were just talking to like one of the folks who like is in our circle, who's wonderful. And we just happened to run into our storage unit today. And she was saying, because she runs estate sales, she said, you know, it's such an honor to be invited into these folks' homes and be able to like see their life through their objects. And it resonated because I say that all the time. It's such a, incredible opportunity just to, you know, some of the people whom we, like some of our clients, we've never met the homeowners, the folks who lived in that home. And so you see all the letters that they wrote and the photo albums and like, the, you know, you learn a lot about who they are by the way that they keep their belongings or what they choose to keep or where things are collected. And it's, you know, really special to get to know people and carry on their legacy in that way.
Yeah.
Yeah. And again, I'm also very keen on people's preferences around art, like visual art is really cool. We've gotten some really cool pieces that I like, they just, they're very like wavy and you or someone like someone's grandmother had like cross stitched this beautiful piece. And I'm just like, I don't want to like sell that and have someone throw it away. It's so beautiful. And like, it's a connection to this piece that was so pivotal and to that family. And it's, you know, really beautiful. So I think, you know, I'm a lover of objects. I can't help it.
Old stories, you know, whether that's conscious or not, I don't think it really matters. It's the part that we bring to it, you know, and being able to preserve that chain of information by, you know, knowing the provenance of an object and then passing that on to the customer, you know, it adds so much value in a world where, you know, we're seeing AI essentially reduce everything down to such generalities. It's like to get something unique and real and tangible, it just feels like we've lost that in a big way with the modern information age, you know, like these genuine articles of, you know, American handcrafted furniture, European handcrafted furniture. I mean, there's obviously, like you said, Ryan, there's so many categories or genres to appreciate. You don't want to, I'm the same way. I don't feel like I want to limit myself to any one genre or style. It is neat to meet the different collectors and the people who are obsessed with, you know, that one thing. You know, someone close to me, you know, anytime you talk about furniture, they bring up Belter chairs, right? These Belter chairs is, you know, it's a whole, it's its own category of antique furniture. And if you know, you know, like there's only a few people who really know about this kind of thing. And to me, those are like the rarest types of people to meet. And I love the characters that, you know, come along the way sometimes with these objects, right? Because, you know, whether they've passed on or not, yeah, there's so many stories to learn about and to share. On that note, there's a story that comes to mind. And after our conversation about synchronicity, I'm sure you both know about Carl Jung's beetle story and how this became like a big symbol for him. The scarab beetle sort of symbolized synchronicity in many ways to Carl Jung. And whether you knew that or not, I think it kind of fits really well. I'll send you the story since you're nodding your heads at saying you haven't heard of it. But yeah, it's something to do with a scarab beetle that flew through a window. And Carl Jung has a story about how the synchronicity, you know, measures out. And it's very compelling. But in that, I guess since we're on the point, then what inspired the name De Beetle? I feel like the video I saw on your Instagram kind of gives it away, but I want to hear what you guys have to say about it.
Well, I wish I could say it was Carl Jung's Beetle story. That would be on so many levels way better.
Well, maybe it is now. I mean, you just needed the right.
I was reading Jung, and a beetle flew through the window, and caught it in my hand, and it whispered to me to start moving junk around. And so I quit my job, and here we are today.
It's not far off from how I started this podcast, truthfully. There were no beetles, but yeah, definitely. Yeah.
We were just thinking of a name as we started, and we were trying to be punk rock and surprising. And we thought, you know, we saw all the sort of bland junk removal and thrift stores that, you know, were very, you know,
yeah,
XYZ moving, XYZ junk, or, you know, just really generic. and we wanted to have something that could lend itself to a brand. So we were like, I don't think we can call it Dung Beetle, just, but maybe we could just call it Da Beetle instead. And so that's how.
Yeah,
is that fair assessment?
Used to play on it.
Yeah. Well, and Ryan had been listening to NPR maybe like a week or two earlier and had heard this interesting segment about was it an environmentalist or who was it?
It was some insect person, a PhD, who was studying dung beetles in Massachusetts and basically said there was 250 different species of dung beetle in Massachusetts, and they're responsible for keeping the forest floor clean, basically. So that's...
I've only ever seen like dung beetles in wildlife footage from like Africa and like, you know, exotic places. So to hear there's that many species, not just like one species, there's 20 varieties of
250 different. Yeah. And
250. Wow.
And she was saying in a single forest in Massachusetts.
Right. Wow. So, yeah. See, I that's something that, you know, again, I love the environment. I love going out on a hike, but that is something I've never seen out in the forest or on a hike, is a dung beetle. So that's really, I wonder if they're nocturnal or what their schedule is, because I've never seen that. That's so fascinating.
I don't think all of them do the classic, probably, image that we have, or the symbol that we have co-opted of a beetle, like rolling dung. I think they're probably
specific behavior, probably something to do with them living in the desert. Interesting. Yeah. But they're still, you know, a part of this vast ecosystem that, you know, oftentimes we'll have people on this show who, again, a head full of conspiracies, they'll tell us things like, you know, well, actually, all the stuff you've heard about global warming is fake. But, you know, that doesn't mean that we aren't, you know, still in a sort of crisis with the way we treat the environment, right? Just because maybe the ice caps can come back doesn't mean we shouldn't address some of the large and alarming, concerning ways that we're, you know, not just destroying the planet, but disrupting our planet's, you know, built-in system to deal with these things. It's not that the planet can't recover or won't recover. It's that we're disrupting an ecosystem that's sort of designed for us to fit into it, not for us to take it over in this very Western Christian idea of, oh, well, we, you know, God said we dominate the land, so we can just kind of do whatever we want. Oh, sorry, I just killed a tiger cub, you know. Oops, God said I could do it, right? Like, this is, you know, not to get too political or religious for people, but I oftentimes wonder, like, what kind of sanity allows for this type of thinking, you know, to cut your finger off to spare the rest of your body kind of thinking that goes on. You know, we really need to begin to see ourselves as connected to the earth in that way. And the things we leave behind and the things that we waste are a big part of our footprint and how we, again, disrupt this ecosystem.
I think one of the things that I think about a lot is just how disconnected, even myself, how disconnected I am from waste management in general, right? We have objects, we don't need them, whether that be like a package from food or something else, you put it in the trash, someone comes and picks it up and takes it away, and you just never see where it goes. There's very little transparency, perhaps, is a word you could use. So, you know, always giving folks the benefit of the doubt, I think, you know, doing your due diligence, thinking about, you know, where do things go? What is a landfill? Where are they? Sometimes folks will be like, is that even really a problem anymore? Folks have said to us, well, we just burn all of our garbage in the United States. And that's fundamentally not true. There are other places in the world where they do actually do combustion to their garbage. We are not part of that collective. And there are certainly ways that people can innovate in waste management. But yeah, it's something you just don't see in that way. So I think it's easy to sort of put it out of your mind. It's an abstract concept. Like, what is the garbage patch in the middle of the ocean? I don't know. I've never seen it. I've seen a photo of it, but I don't, it's hard to even conceptualize how large a problem it is until I think you've seen it or had firsthand experience with something. So
yeah,
it is a bit unnerving at times to think that folks don't, it doesn't seem to be top of mind all the time.
Well, and a lot of times, yeah, it's simply the people who are, you know, subject to these things. I mean, growing up on Long Island Sound in Connecticut, you hear from anybody who's ever been to a beach in Connecticut, oh, don't swim in that water, gross, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, it's not all bad, but I can remember several instances of sitting on the beach and seeing trash floating through Long Island Sound. And I mean, what do you expect living downstream from one of the biggest cities in the country? You know, it's just, it's, yeah, an unsightly thing that people want to ignore. But how long can we ignore these things? I mean, there's definitely landfills that I've noticed. They're hard to ignore here in Connecticut because Connecticut's such a small state. You know, there's not a place out of the way. It's very rare that there's a place that isn't close to a bunch of people. So, yeah, it's one of those things that, how are we going to educate people about it? I don't know that it's necessarily my or your responsibility to take on that monumental task, but little by little, if we can make a small impact on the areas we're directly connected to, you know, maybe we'll see people notice the trends and say, oh, well, they're doing it right in New England. I mean, I'd like to see that. It's certainly something that people in this area care about. You know, you see preservation all over the state. I know it's the same way in Massachusetts where people put a lot of money towards preservation and conservation. And because of that, we have forests where 250 different species of dung beetle can still live. So yeah, I mean, obviously they're not perfectly pristine, but nature finds a way. So is there anything that you guys feel like you'd like to wrap this conversation up with? Any final thoughts or anything that you feel was left unsaid?
I'd like to say I'm so grateful for you inviting us on. It's super fun. I hope we can see you again sometime, maybe at Brimfield or out. We were just in Connecticut, actually, but we should.
Yeah, not too far. I would love to come and visit your store in Cambridge, and I'm going to include all the info so people who are local can do the same. But yeah, I will be at Brimfield in the same spot, not the same exact space, but the same field where we met. So if you guys are vending or shopping, definitely come by and say hi. And yeah, I'll let you know when I'm in Cambridge, because there's some, there's a few spots in Massachusetts that I still haven't visited that I'd like to. So,
well, we hope resellers will take advantage of the things we put on our website, because we're putting them on for a really good price, and we think resellers can take advantage of it. And to the shop in Cambridge, it's 260 Concord Ave in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Our website is debeetles.com, and our Instagram is at debeetleco. And yeah, we're super excited. This is awesome. And
thank you. No, thank you. I'm so glad we met. It was synchronicity, as I like to, you know, sort of let be the guiding light sometimes on this show. We met at Brimfield, and I said to myself that week, I said, I'm going to meet some cool people who I'm going to have on the podcast. Sure enough, here they are. And again, it's DeBeetle, spelled like the creature, not like the band, folks. Okay. So don't get that confused.
Yeah.
But very awesome to talk to you both, Calla and Ryan. I really encourage people to, even if they don't live in the area, take a look at the website, take a look at the social media page, and just get some ideas for what's possible in your area. Because, you know, even if you're not in New England, there's other antique hotspots around the country. And I have no clue what's going on in other countries, but I know we have listeners in other countries. And hey, you know, maybe we'll work something out. If you guys want to ship something cool over to me, I'll pay the shipping. If it's worth it, I will. So I would love to see what my audience has as far as cool antiques and weird stuff. But as far as this episode goes, thank you both for joining us. And until next time, folks, we'll catch you on the next episode. Until then, immerse yourself in the moment, wherever you are in the now. Does it, folks. That was our conversation with DeBeetle. If you're in the Cambridge, Massachusetts area, go and check out their shop. Accessible and affordable prices for quality vintage and antique goods. I mean, how can you go wrong there? And feel inspired to do the same thing. I mean, folks, I'm telling you, the Facebook marketplace flips are so easy. If you have a Facebook account, you can do it. If you're someone who doesn't like social media, doesn't want to get involved in all that, go around and look for a flea market near you. I guarantee within a couple weeks, you can collect enough stuff to fill a booth, a 10 by 10 booth at a flea market. Some of them are absolutely free to set up at. You can make some good money rehoming things that would otherwise be trash. There's all sorts of things you can specialize in. I mean, I don't know. Maybe people don't find it so interesting. I think it's incredible. So get in touch with me if you're doing something similar. If you'd like to come on the show to talk about how you're helping save the planet from all this waste. Yeah, I know. Save the planet. You've heard the environmentalist BS before, but this is real deal. You know, this is as real as saving wildlife, saving forests, you know, the whole carbon footprint nonsense. You can actually take a real whack at saving the planet for real by doing this kind of stuff. You know, forget about all that carbon nonsense, eco-electric car bullshit. Do this. Reduce waste. It's so easy. All right, folks. That's it. Hope you're having a great summer out there. If you listen to this now, if you're listening to this in the future, good on you. And we'll catch you on the next episode. Until then, immerse yourself in the moment where you are in the now.